And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive. Can I take these off? All right. What is this? This looks good. Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Greetings, my friends. This is the brain of TV's Pinky and the Brain, and you are listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew. Twigs. Come to think of it, Pinky, I have not used twigs in any of my latest plans for world domination. If this works, then Mike and the crew will rule by my side. Yes!
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Mike the Birdman Dodd from This Week in Geek, CRNC 90.1 FM, The Heat, Niagara's New Rock. And I'm joined with my intrepid co-host, the ambiguously gay...
David Double D Dennis. And I like how it took you 30 seconds just to say the name of our station.
Well, that's what I do. It's sort of our thing. But hey guys, as you listen to This Week in Geek, one of our things is we love to talk to interesting people. We've talked to people like Stan Bush, Rick Green, David Hayter, Tiffany Grant,
Brie Grant,
Sean Schemmel.
Yeah, Wendy Lee. All sorts of wonderful people, and they're usually pretty nice.
Exactly. So today, we decided we wanted to talk to someone who pretty much made our childhoods kick so much ass.
Oh, yeah.
We decided to talk to Maurice LaMarche. Now, this is a name you probably don't recognize, but his voice work, oh, you most certainly do. This guy has done voices such as Chief Quimby from Inspector Gadget, and that's a memorable one, but most notably, The Brain from Pinky and the Brain. That's right. We're talking to The Brain himself right now, so without further ado...
Yes, my young friend. He shall take over the world.
Wow.
That was the best possible way you could have introduced yourself, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I did it with a frog in my throat, which is really amazing, because... usually I do it with a mouse in my throat. But anyway, gang, how you guys doing today?
We're not doing too bad. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and speak to the listeners of This Week in Geek.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great. It's great to be talking back up in Canada on any Canadian radio airwaves, and especially yours. We're Facebook friends, and got a couple of your updates as well. So it's nice to be on the show. Thanks.
Well, awesome. Once again, thank you so much, Maurice. So I guess, Maurice, what I want to do is kind of find out where you came from. So obviously you grew up in Canada. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your childhood in Canada and how you eventually made your way to the U.S.?
Well, you know, it's funny. My childhood in Canada was cold 80% of the time. And so I spent a lot of time down in the rec room with the TV on, and eating butter tarts and keeping warm, and television was a safe place for me. Like a lot of people in the 60s, I had we didn't have the word back then, but it was a slightly dysfunctional household, and television was my safe haven. So I'd be downstairs watching the cartoons and watching the 60s era Batman show, and anything I could escape into that was a little bit fantastical. And I found early on that, like Peter Petrelli from Heroes, I had the power to absorb anything I watched on TV. So I would go to school, pretty much quoting the last Bugs Bunny cartoon or Flintstones episode that I'd watched. And at first, you know, it led me to the school psychologist's office, the guidance counselor, and then eventually I worked my way down to the cafeteria in junior high, and I was a source of entertainment rather than worry. And, you know, like you, as you guys so flatteringly described me, you said I defined your childhoods. Well, you know, I Alan Reed and Mel Blanc and Dawes Butler, Don Messick, these guys defined my childhood. So, I would listen. I had no idea who played who in these shows because the credits would roll by like that. They never gave character-specific credits. So I just knew this plaster of names across the screen, and it was kind of cool to eventually, just to jump cut to, you know, my life now. I've actually worked with a good portion of those guys, and it's a huge thrill for me when I get to be in the same studio with, for instance, before Dawes passed away, quite a few years ago. Though I did his second last Cap'n Crunch commercial, so it was really cool to have him be Cap'n Crunch and tell his story of how he came up with the voice, and that he would that voice was this sort of Thurston Howell the Third type character in his life, this Harvard-educated man who was a bit of a dodderer and a forgetful guy, and he first used about fractured fairy tales, So I love doing that, and I love being in the studio with Don Adams, doing the last season of Inspector Gadget, and just thinking that cartoon voiceovers was nothing but, sitting in a chair, reading the words, no memorization, just reading the words, and getting to hear great stories from your favorite TV star when you were a kid. I probably got the entire making of Get Smart in that 22 episodes with Don, because we'd read a page and then we'd do 10 minutes of Don's stories. So everything that's on the DVD box set of Get Smart, all the stories he tells on the extras, I'd already heard them 20 years ago doing Inspector Gadget.
Now, when you got into this industry, did you go into it trying to have the same impact on children that people like Mel Blanc had on you when you were a kid?
No. Strangely enough, no. My thing was that I came out of stand-up comedy. I was one of the original comics from Yuck Yuck's Comedy Cabaret in Toronto. I opened the permanent Toronto club with Steve Brinder and Larry Horowitz and Brian Mazumok and Mark Breslin. And, I came at it as a stand-up comic. Voiceovers to me happened as this thing on the side that one day the voiceover agent from the William Morris Agency was in the audience, and I was with them for stand-up comedy personal appearances, and my agent had brought his friend down, who was this gal who just opened up the voiceover department. And, she said, here's this great way to make a living. So I said, all right, sure. So she sent me off on auditions for literally a year without me booking anything. And she still believed in me. And I wasn't getting discouraged because I still had my stand-up thing going. I was touring with Rodney Dangerfield and The Temptations and the Four Tops and people like that. So, every now and again I'd go out on something. And then I started thinking, got to be neat to get one of these things, And the first thing I booked, they canceled the series. It was something about dinosaurs. And I think out of guilt, the lady, Marcia Goodman from Deke Cartoons, Deke Enterprises, felt badly enough that she, as a consolation prize, they were doing Inspector Gadget, and she threw me the chief. And, I had this great experience, and then rolled right into Ghostbusters. And that was strange, because they told me on Ghostbusters, note the film had been a big hit. No, they don't want anybody to sound like the kid. Nobody's to do an imitation of the people from the movie. And they had this huge casting call. And I remember being there, and Arsenio Hall and the guy from the movie, oh God, Ernie. I can't remember his last name now. Ernie Hudson were the only two guys reading for Winston. And Arsenio looked at me. We knew each other from comedy, from stand-up. He looked at me across the room, and he mouthed the words, "I don't know what the F I'm doing here." And I looked at him and I rolled my eyes. I went, no kidding, they got the guy from the movie. But I also thought, well, if they're looking at Ernie, then they're probably letting go of that don't sound like the guys from the movie thing. So I went into my best Harold Ramis when I went in. And it turned out that I was the only person they allowed to sound like the guy in the movie initially. And then Lorenzo was Peter, and then Bill Murray halfway through the season said, how come everybody's guy sounds like them, but my guy doesn't sound like me, he sounds like Garfield. So they unceremoniously let Lorenzo go after he just had everybody over to his beautiful house for Christmas dinner, and cast Dave Coulier, who does a perfect Bill Murray impression. And that was, so we finished up the series with Dave Coulier. I don't know how we got on that story, but there's a little, I guess, cartoon trivia for you.
Actually, that's something I did want to follow up with you about. When like, you were doing the voice work for the Real Ghostbusters show, what were some of the behind-the-scenes stories? Like, were there any episodes that were particularly difficult? Because one of my favorite episodes was an episode called Collect Call of Cthulhu, and that deals with like H.P. Lovecraft, and you're throwing out a lot of really difficult terminology from the old H.P. Lovecraft books. And I'm just wondering, was it a challenge to learn all the really weird terminology for a series like that?
Well, let me just preface this by saying I was not a huge Lovecraft fan. I really had never read anything by Lovecraft. Joe Straczynski, who wrote the show early on and is now like unto a god in the sci-fi and comic book world, he was a huge Lovecraft fan, and all the writers under him were. He was our story editor, and so they would work with us on these pronunciations. I grew up with my dad. Spent a little time in broadcasting, which might be where I might have gotten the voice thing from. But after he did his little stint in broadcasting, he went right into pharmaceutical sales. And he worked for a big pharmaceuticals company in Canada called F.W. Horner. And he used to, just practice the names. And I used to go up with him while he would practice saying the names of all these complicated medications as he was, going around to the various pharmacies selling them. So I would listen to him, and I would say, teach me that one, Daddy. So I learned really young how to sound very intelligent without actually being intelligent. So I always had a propensity for pronouncing big words rather well and kind of catching them and being able to decode them real quickly. And, I've played more scientific geniuses on cartoon shows, I think, as a result of that experience with my dad. Just big medical words and I'm, complicated terminologies just come easily to me. So, which helped with playing Egon, of course, who was the egghead of the group. But I just had a tremendous amount of respect for these guys. They're so steeped in the lore, as it were, and yet had a way of curving it so that it was funny all the time. We always felt, and I think Joe, was of the same mind, and same with Mark Sicri and a lot of the writers, that they really wanted these cartoons to be a continuation of the movie. If you felt like you were just watching the sequel to the movie, you were doing something right. And that's really, that's really all there is. That's one of my demon dogs right now, actually, going through.
Oh, okay.
They always felt that if you were watching, say, Chapter 2 of the Ghostbusters movie, then they did their job, that you were just watching the flow just float easily from the movie into these cartoon shows. It wasn't some cartoonized version of Ghostbusters. You were watching those characters carrying on their real lives, what happened after the events of the movie. And I think they were very successful at doing that. They wrote to an adult level, and it was great.
Now, you mentioned your father earlier. Can you talk just a little bit about the horrible tragedy that happened with him and maybe how that shaped you as an actor and a performer?
Well, unfortunately, my dad's passing was very difficult because he was murdered, and he was murdered by a man who was a lifelong friend who we've discovered was a sociopath and just had no.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was 3, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader!" You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could. Because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
No way of even being able to differentiate between... you know, right and wrong or anything like that. But what it did for me was, unfortunately, it derailed that stand-up career, amongst other things, and derailed me into a world of depression and drinking, I have to say. And, you know, it took me out. It took me out for a couple of years because my entire worldview just shifted. And, you know, it was a way of losing innocence and losing optimism that... That knocked me on my butt for a couple of years, and when it was time for me to pull out of that, I had to get sober with the help of many sober friends, and pick myself back up. And luckily the voiceover thing never went away for me. It was something that I could still find it within myself to do. The idea of going on stage and making people laugh, though, left me as a viable use of my energy. It was just was knocked out of me, as it were. And just as I was, kind of getting back into the stream of things and going up at the Comedy Store, I had a second tragedy in a very short period of time. My baby sister, Jacinda, was killed in a car accident at the age of 18. And at that point, I think it was just that was it. I just went, it's too much sad in a short period of time. And, I never really made it back to the stand-up stage. I was very fortunate, though, in that, the voiceover thing did keep coming for me. And, in fact, the morning that I found out about my sister dying, I was in the studio with Jonathan Winters, Keanu Reeves, and Alec Winter doing an episode of the Bill and Ted cartoon show. And those all three of them couldn't have been nicer about it. I mean, they just, had come from getting the news. And, the next flight wasn't going to be out till midnight, so I decided to work the job, anything to take my mind off of it. And these two kids and this brilliantly funny older man just kind of really supported me and got me through the day, along with Gordon Hunt, the director. And, I was surrounded by wonderful cartooniness, as it were. So, that was it. I mean, it was just a lot of tragedy in a short period of time, I'm only now starting to look at maybe getting back up on stage. I'm actually working on a one-man show called Don't You Hate When Somebody Murders Your Dad, a stand-up tragedy. And it would be from the point of view of a stand-up comic actually, talking about this stand-up comedy style, but it's about the huge questions of life. What is good? What is evil? What is love? What is loss? How do you recover from that? And yet doing it with voices and impressions and multimedia. And so I'm just starting out on that. And so you might see me on a stage near you sometime in the next couple of years doing something a little different, but still kind of familiar and funny and hopefully a little new.
Wow, that's incredible just to see you take the personal tragedies that you experience and to transform it into something like that. Wow, that's really beyond words, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that when you finally put it together, actually, even if it's just on a DVD or something.
Well, it may end up that way, but that's my big project right now is to get that thing on the boards and work it out. And there's actually a tremendous message of redemption in it and of finding a way of moving on. I had the miraculous. And I can only, and I'm not talking about, changing one substance into another kind of miracle. I'm talking about being in the right place at the right time, coincidence being God's way of staying anonymous, if you will, of being on an airplane that I really wasn't supposed to be on, but ended up there anyway, with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And I was through a series of events, most of which involved me being a little bit brazen, but always humble, I got to have a 10-minute audience with the Dalai Lama in the first-class section of his Air Canada flight from Los Angeles to Vancouver as he began his first Canadian tour a few years ago.
Wow.
And was able to, through that, process a lot of the rage that I'd felt. And that's going to be not only that, the message that he gave me that I try to carry to people. Will be in the show, no question.
Wow, yeah, I was actually just about to ask you about the Dalai Lama experience because we were reading up on it, and just what was it like to be in the presence of someone who's so historically important, a living legend?
Well, you'd have to ask the Dalai Lama because, you know, being the brain and being Egon, I'm sure he was very humbled to be in my presence. No, I'm kidding. One day I shall take over the world and the Dalai Lama shall be my minister of spirituality. No, I'm kidding. It was amazing. It was truly amazing. Not to crap on the experience by trying to make it about me and my silly little talent, but it was getting just a little too real there, guys, for a minute.
Sorry.
But anyway, it was really amazing. And the way it came about was I simply wrote an honest note on the plane and asked one of the monks, how do I get it to him? And the monk who was in the across the aisle from me said, give it to a secretary. And I passed him the secretary the note, and I said, I'll just give this to you and I leave it in your hands. And so, you know, for some reason, the Dalai Lama saw me. And to be in his presence is really quite amazing. First of all, he's a very impish guy. The first thing he did was look out over his glasses at me with this quizzical little smile, and I didn't quite know what to do. I didn't know if he was going to crack a joke or if he was going to tweak my nose or if he was just kind of like saying, you know, there's a big joke going on. It's called the universe, and I'm in on the joke. Are you? That was the biggest sort of sense of anything that I got from him non-verbally. And then when we had our conversation, he talked to me about a definition of forgiveness that I'd never heard before, which was simply to... It doesn't mean to forget. It doesn't mean to make friends with. It simply means to let whomever you're persecuting in your brain. He said to me, this man who killed your father, you have a torture chamber for him in your mind, do you not? I said, yes, I do. And you do many terrible things to him in there, do you not? I said, yes, Your Holiness, I do. And he said, you must open the door and let this man out of the prison of your mind. By forgive, I do not mean forget. I simply mean let him out of the prison of your mind. And for some reason, I took that as a meditation, and I literally found a door on the side of my mind and just ushered him out of it. He walked out himself. And from that point on, that's been the meditation I've used whenever any feelings of rage or anger come up. And it's truly helped me. And I've had a lot of people say, geez, if you can do that with the man who killed your father, I can do that with the a-hole who cut me off on the freeway this morning. So it's a much longer and more involved story than that. And it's actually, there's some humorous bits to it. And so that will definitely be the climax of don't you hate when somebody murders your dad.
Wow.
That's pretty
actually,
cool.
just kind of going along that scene, because how the Dalai Lama inspired you. Have you ever had an interaction with a fan of your work that's maybe left you inspired?
I had, you know, not necessarily... that I know that I've inspired, although, you know, I've had one or two guys, actually Chris Edgerly, who I respect tremendously, who does a lot of work in the animation world, was on Harvey Birdman a whole bunch, told me just recently at the Simpsons party, this last, the 20th anniversary party, he said, you know, I've never told you this, but we used to watch you on the Young Comedian special. He said, I was like 14 years old, and I watched you on the Young Comedian special. I said, I want to do what that dude's doing. I want to be that guy. He said, so it's like really cool for me that I'm here now and working in cartoon studios with you. And I just thought, wow, gee, I just never knew that. I never thought anybody watched or cared. So, gee, thanks, Chris. That's great. But the most touching thing that ever happened was a guy did tell me once. He wrote me in a fan mail and said that I basically got him through his high school, that he was immensely overweight and unpopular and, you know, introverted, and many was the time that he went home thinking that, you know, he just wanted to end it all, and he put on Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain, and that just the laughs that the show brought him dispelled those thoughts from his head. You know, that's why I'm a big believer in laughter as a healer, as a type of medicine, and that the endorphins that we get from just laughing, and, you know, can actually mind alter us into a better place. I'm a big believer in keeping laughing no matter what.
Wow. Now, is that one of the key players, I guess, in you getting into animation from stand-up comedy, that you still wanted to kind of keep people laughing, but not
absolutely.
In a public
way? It's always
way.
Been important for me to do funny stuff. I mean, I've been honored that I've gotten to be on some of the funniest writing, the writing on Futurama, Pinky and the Brain, The Critic, The Simpsons, which I've, had the pleasure of guesting on about a dozen times. This is the best writing in television, it's no coincidence that it's all animated, because that's the freest form for writers to write any scenario and tell any story they want. They can have their characters do and be anything in the world of animation. So you can tell stories through animation you can't tell in a three-camera sitcom. So, yes, it's absolutely been incredible that I get to be on this stuff. And it's, again, these Harvard Mafia guys, the wittiest guys in town, the funniest guys in town. It's a tremendous, tremendous pleasure.
Now, one of the roles that I wanted to ask you about was on the English dub of Tek on Kinkrete, which is a really hard word to say. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. But you played Rat, I believe. Is that right, or...?
On Tek on Kinkrete, I played the older sergeant of the two cops, was the character.
Oh, okay. But it was still like...
And Tom Kenny was the other guy. He was my part. Tom Kenny, who's SpongeBob. That was both of us
doing
something rather dramatic, actually.
Yeah, that's...
That told a very gritty story.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, actually. Was it more challenging to play a character that was a lot more in-depth, I guess, than just kind of making a funny voice? Because it wasn't
It was probably the first dramatic cartoon I'd ever done, purely drama. And, there was just nothing of the Fozzie Bear waka waka kind of thing to it. It's just keep it straight. It's tragic what's happened to these kids and the life that they have, and going after these scumbags, these criminals. So, yeah, everything had to be played very, very, very tightly and intimately, and, the relationship was much more subdued. But it was doable, and Jack Fletcher's a terrific director, and, he took me through that thing. He's got a big theater background, so, I hope I've got dramatic acting chops. I think drama and comedy are very, very close cousins. And that was not standard fare, but with a good director, I was absolutely happy and thrilled to be able to play drama. So, yeah.
Okay, Maurice. Okay. So we have two final questions for you, then we want you to hang on the line for a couple of promos. So the question I want to ask you, what was the role that in 40 years you're going to tell people about that you were the most proud about? And then what's a piece of advice you'd like to give to the audience of This Week in Geek?
Unless something better comes along, which I really can't see, the role that... Yeah, it's got to be the brain for me. And the central thing about the brain is not... The central, sort of note of the brain is that he never gives up. It's, the taking over the world, the plans, all that stuff, very amusing, very, very wacky and funny. But what I always loved about the brain is at the end of every episode, it was... The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world. And, the idea that this guy could dust himself off after having everything happen to him, including going through a Kiki Sack sock-plucking machine, and just get beat up episode after episode and still want to go after his goals. You got to love that. You got to love that kind of stick-to-itiveness, that kind of... tenacity. And I also love that relationship, the idea that, these two guys, they're all each other has, and there's really, a deep love between them. And one of them can show it, and the other one can only be in it and just have it masquerade as tolerance. But Brain loves Pinky. And he was a very multi-layered character for me. I mean, for what should have started out as a one-note joke, two lab mice trying to take over the world, it really became a very, very rich show, a rich relationship. And, it's something I miss to this day. Playing that character is something that every day, at least once a day, I go, God, I wish I'd do more Pinky in the Brains. Oh, I miss that show. And then, carry on with my life. like a wonderful lover you were once with and can't be with ever again, but just to think, God, I wonder what she's doing now. I'd love to be with her again. And that's so for me, Pinky and the Brain, again, terrific writing there, terrific characters, well-defined characters, and terrific relationship. And what advice I would give is, if you know, do you want philosophy or do you want how to break into voiceovers?
Let's do both, because you are actually a rather deep person. I think that'd be a rather interesting insight for our listeners.
Philosophically, I can only mimic the Dalai Lama or the people the Dalai Lama said. If you're walking around carrying around something today that's eating you alive, you know, if it's a resentment of the person, picture that person in the prison that you have for them in your mind, and just open the door and let them out. You don't have to play in a field of daisies with them. You don't have to have them over for dinner. You just have to let them out of the prison of your mind, because they're living there rent free. And if you want to break into voiceovers, waka waka waka. I should have ended with the philosophy. I think I will end with the philosophy. You want to break into voiceovers, make me a Facebook friend and I'll tell you.
Awesome stuff.
Cool. Maybe I'll be asking you a few questions later, maybe.
Awesome. Well, all right, Maurice. So we're just going to do our sign-off for the show. Then we'll hang on the line with you for just a second. So, guys, that was Maurice LaMarche, voice acting god and the Brain himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was totally awesome and a lot of helpful insight there.
Absolutely. So, guys, we definitely want you to stay tuned to ThisWeekInGeek.net for more fantastic interviews. And I really hope we'll have a chance to talk to some other really cool people, get some more fantastic insights. So for This Week in Geek, we have been
David Double D Dennis.
And I've been, of course, been Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying live free and die hard. And we will be back next week on ThisWeekInGeek.net and, of course, on 90.1 FM The Heat, Niagara's new rock.
See ya.
This is Dr. Egon Spengler of the TV show Real Ghostbusters, and you're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew. Twig crew. Don't we have him in the containment system, Peter?
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
Capitalism! Freaking capitalism!
Where's our cut?
The Birdman has lost his mind. Stay tuned next week when he evidently doesn't find it again.
See, the moose are extinct. We shot the last one. That's all urban legend.
Stay tuned next week for Electric Boogaloo. Coming up next.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week when you hear Mike say,
and don't forget to spay or neuter your pet, noob.
So make sure to tune in next week on 90.1 FM, The Heat, Niagara's new rock. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content, as well as subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment about this week's episode, head to our forums at thisweekingeek.net/forums. We'll see you next week, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
This is Calculon, the star of all my circuits, the show within a show on Futurama. And you're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Murd... Oh, crap. Take two.
Geico presents... Yikes! Another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
The internet can be your window to the world. Or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.